So Arya Kaplan's Immortality, Resurrection, Age of the Universe, page 1.
I didn't get through.
World Before Our Own, is that what we're up to?
Yep.
Okay. Who wants to read?
Oh, I'll read. I like to
read.
I had to be stopped on page 109.
I had my mark right there.
So we read already Proofs for the Principle of the Resurrection?
Yep.
Okay, so 110.
Worlds Before Our Own. The Talmud states in Sanhedrin 97a, the school of Abaya taught, 6,000 years is the duration of the world with 1,000 years of desolation. Furthermore, it was taught, just as the sabbatical year cancels debts once in 7 years, so too the world has its sabbatical millennium once in 7,000 years. The same idea is found at the end of Tractate Tamid. On the Sabbath, the Levites would sing the psalm for the Sabbath day, Psalm 92, for a day that is all sabbatical, rest for all time. This is the secret of all that shall be. However, our sages, may their memory be blessed, have revealed to us, with their precious words, the secret of all that has come to pass, to shed a little light on these matters as though through the eye of a fine needle. As it is stated in Genesis Rabbah, it was evening and it was morning, thus raising the difficulty that since the sun had not yet been created, how could there be morning and evening? Said Rabbi Abahu, from here we learn that the dimension of time existed before this. This teaches that the Holy One, blessed be He, created the worlds and destroyed them, saying, this satisfied me, this does not satisfy me. So that
I struggle with that.
So, but that's the whole idea that before Hashem even began the creation of the world, the first thing He established was time.
Oh, for sure. That's for sure.
Yeah.
Clear.
So
right, and then but here it's saying something further that He created and destroyed other worlds.
Yes. Right. Right. There were many of them, many thousands.
Right, there's the possible. Right,
yeah, so that's what it says.
That's a Kabbalistic
Gemara
theory.
Yeah,
there is such a concept.
Yeah.
Right,
and I struggle with that because didn't He know what He was doing?
It doesn't say that He was making mistakes. It just says He created and destroyed a lot.
It said it didn't satisfy me. Here, it
right,
says,
doesn't say that it was a mistake though. It doesn't. I think people set up these false dichotomies a lot. That's a different question. I was listening to Sam Harris yesterday, who's a strong atheist, and one of his arguments for atheism is that how many children die under 5 every day? So before I reach the end of this sentence, a few children will die in misery and suffering, and their parents will be praying for them to stay alive. So that it happens every minute of every hour of every day. So what kind of God allows that? Either God is impotent and can't help them, so either he's not powerful, or He doesn't care, so He's evil. So that's how He set it up.
Mm-hmm.
He's either impotent or
mm-hmm.
evil.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Or you could ask another question. Why is it that God allows that to happen?
Right.
There must be some reason for that.
Mm-hmm.
So it may be difficult. You might not want to explore it. It might be difficult reasons, you know, but it's not because He's saying, well, you know, the Christians will say, well, God is mysterious, right? So you have to look for a different reason. You can't just set up two things and say He's either evil or impotent, and you can't hear either say, well, if He destroyed them, it must be because He was unsatisfied, which must mean either He made a mistake or He wasn't capable of making it or He didn't know what He was doing at first. And so He was like us, trying to hit the right mark, and it took Him several thousands of worlds before He got it right. That's not the case. So what you can do is just say, oh, that's interesting. He made and destroyed many worlds. I wonder why He did that.
Mm-hmm.
That's all.
Right.
I wonder why.
Right. Mm-hmm. Okay, but the difference between us and Him is we're trying to rule Him in. He's trying to rule Him out.
You're saying us and Sam Harris.
Right.
Yeah, for sure. But I'm saying you don't have to struggle
with
this.
That's the difference.
But what I'm saying is you don't have to struggle with this. The reason why you're struggling with it is because it bothers you.
Right. It does bother.
Because you think He wasn't doing it right.
No, because He did something
that didn't satisfy him.
Right,
that's what I'm saying.
Why would He mess with that? Why would He go through that
process?
Right,
so just ask that.
Okay, well, I am.
Right, that's all.
I just went through
I don't know the answer.
Way, but
didn't he destroy the world, basically? Well, maybe not the world, but he destroyed the people in it twice. Sodom and the flood.
Well, just the whole world with the flood, and the only Sodom area.
Yeah, only that
Sodom.
Area, not the whole world.
Only the Sodom.
Yeah, just the Sodom area.
Yes,
yeah.
Just
the,
that area, but those towns.
The flood was the whole world, right? Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Right.
So I'm just making a statement that my note from a year ago, Hashem created something imperfect. Was my question.
Right, so that's why I would change that question to, I wonder why Hashem went through this process.
Okay.
That's a very different question.
He only creates perfection. So there was something about the perfection that wasn't to his liking.
Maybe. Or maybe not.
Yeah.
Maybe, like, for instance, he created Adam and Chava, the Adam creature, as one androgynous being, and then put it to sleep and made two. So some people might say, what? Was it a mistake? He really wanted two, but he made one at first, and now he had to create two. Adam was lonely. He couldn't make him a mate.
Because the animals had been made
two
by two.
Right, so why did he create him as one and then have to divide him in two?
Right.
So you have to say, if he didn't do it, there must be a reason. Let me see if I can learn that reason. And even if you can't learn it, you have to know that there is one.
But I still think my question comes up because I'm ruling him in.
Right, so then you can say, is it possible that he did? Like, is that what was going on here? So you just have to ask that a question rather than rhetorically.
Right.
Just ask it, like, what?
Why?
Why was he unsatisfied with these?
It's a similar thing to what we just went through with Passover. Mm-hmm. Why did he go through the 10 plagues?
Right.
So we feel like we have a good possible reason.
Right. If you think it's about releasing the Jews, big mistakes. So that's why you have to.
Okay, you know what? Your question is answered somewhat.
Okay.
So good. That's good.
Okay.
In order to perceive the matter more completely, Rabbeinu Bahya has revealed to us an esoteric teaching in the name of the Kabbalist in his commentary on the Sedra of Bahar on the verse, "The land shall have rest, a Sabbath to God." This hints at a wondrous secret that the world will be built up and destroyed seven times, corresponding to the seven sabbatical years in the Jubilee, making 49,000 years in all. And in each of these sabbatical periods, he continues, the world is in a greater state of perfection than the preceding, so that in the end, all the holy sparks that were bestowed on material beings at the beginning of creation by the Holy One, blessed be He, in order that they themselves perfect themselves, will return to the first cause, blessed be He, in the highest state of perfection possible, as is as well, may He be blessed. This is the ultimate purpose of the creation of the world, such as the content of His words there. So in other words, He created worlds that maybe were striving toward perfection hadn't quite got there.
Right.
So He...
And he could see it wasn't going to get there.
Yeah, so he kept building.
No, I'm not saying it wasn't going to get there. So that's the same thing as the Sam Harris question, right? It's not that God is infinite or evil.
Well, no, but
rather
if he
God,
gave them free will.
But rather that God has set up workshops for us to perfect ourselves.
Right.
So it's not that he destroyed the world because he saw it's not going to get there. He said, okay, now it's time for the next workshop.
Mm-hmm.
And the next workshop.
Mm-hmm.
Let me now create the
appropriate... Who's that workshop for?
If the other ones
were destroyed.
Us. No, but only the physical was destroyed. The sparks were not.
Oh.
So they would...
The
they
sparks
would
of holiness keep going.
To perfect themselves.
They just go through from level to level to level. It's like going to elementary school and then having the elementary school destroyed, but then you go to middle school. And you graduate from there, and then you go to high school, and you graduate from there, and then you go to college.
So we're saying that the sparks...
Each environment provides a different opportunity.
The sparks were manifested in humans, human beings. And ultimately, all the sparks will come together, and that will be, you know, the perfection of mankind. But in all these other worlds, these sparks/human beings were working the workshop idea toward perfection, and it just... You know, maybe God was impatient, and He wanted to finally get to
Can't
the place.
Can't be impatient.
All right. Well, you're right.
Right.
But
no,
he knew.
If you
knew,
understand,
ultimately.
If you think about
it,
like elementary school,
designed.
Middle school, high school,
yeah,
and college.
Yeah, was the process.
Right, that there needs to be different environments for different levels.
He had to go through the process.
Right. We had to go through the process.
But He had to create it for us to go through the process.
Right. Right, exactly. Yeah. Think about the schools, exactly yeah. like that, right? So once we graduated from sixth grade, mm-hmm. a new world had to be created mm-hmm. for us mm-hmm. to go into middle school. It wouldn't be good if we went back to third grade right. to keep learning.
Right, right.
Did that already. Genius. Now we need a new environment, yeah. right? You graduate from eighth grade, you need a new environment. You graduate from high school, you need a new environment. You can't learn stuff that you need to learn in the same old environment.
Right.
So that's what God is doing here. It's not that he's impatient. It's not that he thought it wasn't good enough. He had a reason for recreating and recreating and recreating.
So he did destroy and recreate, or did he build on to what he had?
It looks like he destroyed and recreated. But these are all Kabbalistic theories.
Sparks
of that humanity.
Sparks of holiness that could be human, depending on how much Kabbalah you learn, which I haven't learned that much, but there's humanity. And there's also other sparks, too. You know, rocks have sparks, and flowers have sparks, and... Mm-hmm. Water droplets have sparks, and puppies have sparks.
So it could have been just a world of rocks.
Maybe.
Let's say that was destroyed.
Right, but what he's saying here, what did he say, the sparks?
Let's read that once more.
He said,
they themselves were set themselves.
So that in the end, all the holy sparks that were bestowed on material beings at the beginning of creation by the Holy One, that in order that they themselves perfect themselves, will return
that
to
they
the first
themselves
cause.
Perfect themselves.
Yeah,
right.
So they will ultimately become.
So that we have this journey of
perfect.
Hashem is everything, and there's nothing else. And then somehow he allows something to break off from Hashem to become
right.
us.
This,
right.
This
then we are entrusted with that, and
will.
We get to work with that. But in the end, it's all united back up. That's the thing that you don't like either, right?
Yeah.
That you get blended back in the end.
Right.
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 This is. I studied Kabbalah with David Sanders for about 4 years, which is very minimal. But this is all in keeping, kind of, with this whole thought of the holy sparks, and man is like a husk. And the Holy Spark is inside us. That's kind of our soul. And at the end of days, the husk will fall away, and we'll just have this essentially pure energy that will return to Hashem. But this is after the resurrection and after after that.
Right.
Right. Yeah. That's where you can reconcile your problem.
Yeah.
Hopefully.
This is tough.
Okay. Well, yeah, it's just that I don't like it. I don't like the
design. You don't
design.
Like it, I don't like the idea.
Right. But anyway, I'm sure I'll have to deal with it. It's not my design. I'm not the architect.
Right.
So.
Well, not too many people even know about this.
No, I know. I know.
So you're way ahead of the game.
Yeah.
Nachmanides, too, hints somewhat at this doctrine in his comments on the verse, which God had created to do, as does Ibn Ezra on the verse, all the days of the earth still, and Rekhanate on the Sidra of Bahar, where he wrote that several mitzvot hint at this doctrine. I guess we'd have to go back and look at those sources. We have seen that the number 7 recurs often in several of the mitzvot, such as 7 days of the week, 7 days of Passover, 7 days of Sukkot, 7 days of menstrual impurity, 7 days of menstrual purification, 7 days before circumcision, 7 days of mourning, 7 days of feasting for a wedding, 7 sabbatical years in the Jubilee, the 7 branches of the menorah, 7 sprinklings of blood on the Day of Atonement, and many more. Wow, that is a lot of 7s.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's a big number.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Those privy to the secrets of the Torah whisper that the 7 cycles of the world correspond to the 7 days of creation, each one of which was a preparation for the day following, as we may see from the story of a creation, when we examine it carefully, that each cycle is a preparation for the following cycle, and that each cycle is more highly perfected than the one
which
before.
Which is the same principle
right.
you were talking about.
So, supposedly, we are in that last cycle.
Right, that's what we're thinking.
We're
right.
here.
Yes.
It's 5773 and 6000.
Right.
We're really close.
Yeah.
And every soul that's here now was meant to be, because we are, this is nothing, that we have attained a certain level of perfection that we're allowed to be alive at this time.
Mm-hmm.
And what our souls are doing, supposedly, are very little. We've done all the work in the past, a lot of heavy-duty work. So a lot of this lifetime, there's not that much for us to do for perfection. I mean, that's a relative term.
It's interesting because it could be seen both ways.
Saying.
On the one hand, it could be seen there's not that much to accomplish.
Yeah.
Our Rivka
right,
comes in and goes. It's not much to accomplish.
Yeah.
Or look at us, and we all have got so much stuff in our lives. Yeah. You know, all the tsar that we have is because we're at the end of time, but we've got a lot of wrinkles.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a lot of ironing to be done that we have to finish up. You know, like it's all been moved. And if anybody ever quilted, it's so frustrating when you quilt. Sometimes you like quilt this side first, and then all the extra fabric moves to that side. And you're like, how am I ever going to get that wrinkly stuff smushed down? Yeah. It's really hard.
Yeah.
So,
well, how am I going to smooth that additional stretch?
You can't.
I stretched too much.
Right. So that's where we're holding. A lot of people are holding there with so many. That's why there's so much financial service and learning disabilities and medical issues and tons of stuff. And every family has more than one. You know, you don't meet like, you know, easy, happy-go-lucky families anymore. Like everybody's got off the derech kids and everybody's got, you know, something. Or in a lot of them, a lot of some things. So,
God's secret is given to those who fear him. The Kabbalists know that we are now in the fourth cycle, which corresponds to the fourth day of creation, in which the Holy One, blessed be he, set the lights in the sky. It is for this reason that the light of Torah can be compared to a sun, the greater light, lighting the earth from one end to the other. Though due to our great sins, the honor of the nation has greatly declined, our holy Torah stands as a clear sun in the middle of the horizon so that all nations, even those, as for example, the Christians and Muslims, who feel themselves unobligated to keep the mitzvot, exalt and honor the holy Torah and recognize its divinity. The Torah, in its honor and strength, is like a sun shining its rays on all the world's inhabitants. Okay, so he says this, we're in the fourth cycle. Yeah, so when was this written?
It's 1800s. Yeah. No, it's not Arya Kaplan.
Oh, no.
Okay. No, this essay is 1800.
Oh, 1800. Okay, so we're in...
That's what I'm wondering.
We're in the sixth going into the seventh.
That's my understanding.
I mean,
I don't know what this means necessarily. And I'm also curious about what he says here. Was Islam feeling differently 100 years ago that they venerated the Torah?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, that doesn't make sense today. Yeah. I mean, they are very... I mean, and a lot of Jews are very... Christians are very against Jews.
No. Jews is different than Torah.
Okay, well, right. All right, so Torah.
Christians are totally pro-Torah. The Christians recognize that the Torah is divine.
Yeah.
That God gave the Torah to the Jews at Mount Sinai, and that's the beginning of their Bible. They recognize that.
Mm-hmm.
Like that Christians believe. Right? The question is Muslims. And whether or not they like Jews, that's a whole separate question. But that the Torah is real and divinely given, that's agreed upon.
Right.
Right. And then
more so in Christianity than the other.
Islam.
Christianity believes that the ritual observances have been fulfilled.
But that's not even the question.
In their Messiah.
I'm just saying, is the Torah
they
real?
They still honor...
Yeah. Is the Torah real?
I mean, they hang their
hats on the
Nevi'im and Ketuvim. They do.
Right. Well, but not just that. They practice that way. But they absolutely 100% believe that the Jews got the book from God on the mountain.
Right.
Right? And
right.
There's no question about it. Whether or not the book applies today is a different question.
Only parts of it apply.
That doesn't matter. The point is that they got it.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And that it's the same as it is today. That they hold.
Mm-hmm.
Right? They definitely agree
with
that.
So they recognize the divinity, but they are not obligated to keep the mitzvot.
Right.
Okay. Moreover, just as during creation, two lights were fashioned, the greater light to rule the day corresponding to the Torah as noted above, and the lesser light corresponding to man's intellect, which rules the world. Okay, it's like sun and moon.
Uh-huh.
This too will be greatly exalted in this cycle, and in coming times will be exalted to an extent now inconceivable by the human intellect.
Well, we're there.
Wow, I mean, man's intellect is becoming a major light.
It's crazy.
Yeah.
Have you seen Google Glass?
I saw Diane von Furstenberg was wearing these glasses in the New York Times yesterday, and supposedly you can see.
It's crazy. Just look up Google Glass video, and you can watch the video.
What is it?
To be believed, right? We're busy with these phones. How big should the screen be? A little bigger than this?
Yeah.
Like now they're a little bigger than this because
right.
you can watch everything on it, right?
Right?
So why shouldn't you have it bigger? So I said, Donnie, how big do you think they're going to get? He said, I think they're going to go screen free. because you're not going to need a screen at all, because you're going to wear this special thing where the whole thing is projected right in front of you. You don't need a screen at all. And it's controlled by your eyeball movements.
Oh my God.
It's unbelievable. Yes. I'm telling you, it GPSs for you. Whoa. It gives you alternate transportation routes. It looks up your bookstore. It locates your friend and shares a position with him. You text people. You can video chat. It's like not normal.
Yeah.
Yeah,
we think that being able to do FaceTime and stuff like I do with my daughter is unbelievable. But some of the programs that I see, they use a similar technology. Using it in the story.
Yeah, it's just nuts. I mean, when you see it, and it just keeps going and going, and that's not the end. There's no end. We all, at least we know that now.
Yeah.
Unlike in the 60s or the late 1800s when scientists would say, we have now come to the end of human understanding. We have discovered all there is to discover. Yeah. People used to say that.
Yeah, they did.
Now at least
there's
we know that we can never, ever say that again.
Mm-hmm.
Like they would just keep going. We expect it.
Right.
That tomorrow there's going to be something new.
It. Right.
And we're going to read about something and say, really? Oh my gosh. But we expect the next week we're going to say the same thing.
Yep.
Again and again and again.
Right. Right.
Yep, and that is what's happening. It's crazy. Yep. It is inconceivable.
I feel absolutely privileged that Hashem has allowed me to see what
time.
I see.
Yeah, it's amazing.
Yeah.
Aside from what has been revealed to us secretly from hand to hand regarding these cycles of destruction and renewal, this matter has been well explained in various verses. Broken, shattered is the world. Crumbling, crumbled is the earth. Tottering, dislodged is the earth. The moon will be shamed, and the sun will be abashed. The heaven will be rolled up like a scroll, and all their hosts will wear away. The heavens will wear away like the earth, and the earth will be worn out like a garment. Behold, I will create a new heaven and a new earth.
Is that all to him?
Wow.
Yes,
so, is that what's going to happen?
Those other verses, 184 and 185, were Genesis.
Isaiah. Well, you know, I mean that could also refer to, you know, really the Gog Magog, the ultimate battle, the battle that will last 2 seconds. Someone just presses a button. We talked about that.
Gosh,
the complete destruction and a new world is yet again is being built by God.
Right.
Yeah. Whoa.
It's pretty crazy.
But it's pretty concentrated.
Amazing.
The Gog and Magog thing is pretty Gog and Magog. It's pretty concentrated, the area.
Well, you only need one spark to set the whole world off, you know, and it'll be in Israel,
it carries
that area.
On the waves.
Yeah.
It carries on the winds.
Yeah.
I mean, destruction can carry in the winds.
Who knows?
You know, radiation,
hopefully it won't
whatever.
Have to be so bad.
Yeah,
hopefully
that
Iran.
All these sci-fi things were everything, the scorched earth, you know, type philosophy, that I hope it doesn't wind up like that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, maybe this is the end of this world and the beginning of a brand new world that God's going to create, the ultimate.
It seems
perfection.
Like it. That's,
But he has to destroy it.
Right. So the question is, it's clear that you have to destroy it. So does it have to be destroyed physically?
Yeah.
Is a question.
Well, the other ones were.
Or can it be destroyed? Right. The other ones were. Mm-hmm. That's true. Or can it be destroyed ideologically?
Right.
Which it is. We're right now in the process of witnessing the destruction of the old world and the birth of the new.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so we'll see how many times we watch that.
I'm hoping that it's more.
We'll see how many times we watch that, because we definitely see the death of the old and the birth of the new from everything, you know,
everything,
from morals
right.
to drive. I mean, you see these young kids in their 20s, and some have drive and a lot don't. And I was just talking to one 31-year-old yesterday, what's he want to do with his life, third kid on the way. And I said, what, if you could do anything, what would it be? Well, I'd lead meditation retreats, run a summer camp. I said, what would you do during the rest of your time? I'd like to body surf. Thinking you're 30 freaking 1 years old.
Yeah. But he never got to do that.
He did get to do that. That's what he likes.
Oh, did he? Oh, yeah. He did get to do it. So often you
it's hard moving into responsibility. That's what I'm seeing in this particular person.
People are pushing it further away.
Yep. He's enjoyed those parts that have been adventurous without responsibility, but now he's stuck in responsibility with kids and he can't get out. You know, it's a different world. Like in college, so you can go to yeshiva, and yeshiva, so you can go on retreats, and retreats, so that, you know, you can become a meditator, and you can, and then you go on dates, and then you get married, and then whoops, you're stuck with kids and financial responsibility, and you can't get out into another adventure. Now this adventure is about how do you dig deep and make it work.
Right.
So it's just interesting to watch the level of destructions it talked about. I read in the Wall Street Journal that there's a lot of out of wedlock. I think the majority of 20-something births are out of wedlock. But it said if 30 is the new 20, then the 20s are the new teens. Which means that these are teenage pregnancies.
Wow.
Right?
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Yeah, if you work that on back, it's more troublesome.
Right, because teen pregnancies have gone down. But 20-something out-of-wedlock pregnancies are going up and have all the same problems as teen pregnancies.
And really, 30s, I think, have gone up because women haven't found who they want to spend their life with. They're very career-oriented, and they feel the time clock ticking.
Right.
So they will go ahead and find some way to have a child.
Right, so here we see destruction of worlds and rebuilding of new ones. Mm-hmm. That's what I'm saying.
So we're worried whether it's going to be literal or figurative.
Right. Okay, that's fine.
It is apparent from all this that the world will be renewed after it is made desolate. The biblical expressions which seem to contradict this, the world stands forever, he established them forever, are merely figurative expressions denoting a great length of time. Likewise, he shall serve him forever, i.e. until the Jubilee. You shall keep them as slaves forever. Anyone will judge that the verse wishes only to denote a long period.
Interesting.
Okay. Geological and paleontological discoveries. Now, my dear friends, see how firm is the basis upon which our holy Torah rests. For this secret was revealed to our ancestors and teachers, and they revealed it hundreds of years ago. And now, in our time, we find this again most clearly visible to our eyes in nature. The spirit in man, which yearns, which desires to uncover all hidden matters, to search out like a mole the innards of the earth and the high mountains, the Pyrenees, the Carpathians, the Cordilleras in America, the Himalayas on the border of China, discovering that these mountains were formed by gigantic layers of rock which lie helter-skelter on one another with great and terrible force, hanging cliff-like one on the other by a hair's breadth, to the point at which it is impossible to imagine that this could come to pass except by a world-overturning revolution, which once occurred by his hand, may he be blessed, who reproves the earth and turns it over in a moment. Okay, so that's all the volcanic upheaval and the tectonic plates and the flooding and the, you know, all that.
Right.
Long time ago. Not satisfied with this, they dug several hundreds of fathoms, German Klafter, that's it, into the deeps of the earth and its innards, deep into the mines, bergwerk of the earth. They found four layers of earth, each above the other, each made up of a different sort of mineral, and between these layers they found fossils, which indicate that the earth has been overturned and changed its surface four times.
I bet we find more today.
Oh gosh, four, it seems like such a little number. Yeah. Mm-hmm. The creatures found between these layers are arranged in such a way that those which lie farthest from the surface are fashioned in a larger measure than those which lie in the next layer.
Interesting.
And so, too, those which lie in the second layer are larger than those which are found in the upper most recent layer. Moreover, the diminution in size corresponds to a greater degree of perfection in the structures of the creatures found in the upper layers as compared to those in the lower layers. Mm-hmm. Well, okay, so what were those crab things that are, you know, from, you know, I don't know, 100 million years ago, and then each layer kind of shows more refined dinosaurs and animals. And
that's saying we believe in evolution.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Right.
Yes.
Right? I mean, it's just interesting to see, right? That's what he's saying right there.
Yeah. Yes. Right. I get that from it anyway.
Yeah.
Yes.
You're getting that man came from animals? Is that what you're
saying? No. Evolution doesn't necessarily mean that man came from animals. I mean, it might, but it doesn't necessarily mean that. But here it's saying that there's an evolution in the layers, that natural scientists are seeing an evolution in the layers, and this rabbi, 100-something years ago, not in the current political correct climate, is saying that that's what natural science sees, and then that works within Torah, an evolution of layer after layer of greater perfection after greater perfection.
Mm-hmm.
Right? That's what evolution is. We evolve into more sophisticated layers.
Mm-hmm.
I wonder if that could...
The worlds that were created and destroyed?
Yeah, that's how I was...
That's what he's saying, worlds that were created and destroyed.
Does this include that?
That's what this is saying.
Yeah.
Does that mean that's true? This is one guy, writing with Torah information, for sure, trying to put together with natural sciences. And so that's why it's important to realize that Hashkafa, which this is we don't have to believe one strain, and we can even believe opposing strains. So we just take this in and let it sit there. But we don't have to believe every word that's being said here. We try to figure it out.
One person's opinion.
It's not that it's just one person's opinion, because not just the one. It's one person with depth and import. We don't look at our gedolim and say that's just one person's opinion, although we do after they die. It's interesting, because Rav Moshe Feinstein, who is the greatest posek, certainly of the 20th century, he held that you can't make an Eruv of Ram Nahan. No Eruv in Manhattan, so it was hard for the Manhattan Jews to not be able to, because it was too populous. He felt the island was too populous to make an Eruv, and you can't enclose that many people and still call it private domain. Like there's a limit to how far the fiction and the legal fiction can go, that the facts just oppose that fiction. So he said no. But once he died, he became one of a chorus of voices. And some within the chorus said, yes, you can. And so they did, right away. But while he was alive, he was the posek of the generation. They could not, in the face of him. Not because they were embarrassed for him, but because his voice reigned. But once you die, you cross that line, and you become one of the gedolim, one of the achronim. And then you can...
So now there is an Eruv around Manhattan?
Yeah. I don't know around the whole island, but there's Eruvs in Manhattan.
Within Manhattan.
Mm-hmm.
There's not just one.
I don't know. I just know that now in Manhattan, different places you can carry.
So the destruction of the worlds are not, as I would initially think of it, as destruction of the universe. The worlds being spoken of here could be those worlds that were formed on this planet.
Right.
Okay. Or maybe other planets in the universe. Because there's always the idea that there is life out in other worlds.
Right. I think that's because man is always searching for its origin.
I was thinking about that. Could it be other planets, or could it be this world continually broken down, built up?
I'm thinking that it is this world.
That we know, Earth.
Yes. Before I might have said I was thinking.
Yeah, but that's
worlds,
what he's saying
but
here.
But here, right.
He's saying it.
These worlds that are built and destroyed and built and destroyed are on this planet, because I think about how unique this planet is, how Hashem set this up. This is amazing. If you just watch on the NASA channel and you see the view back of the Earth at different stages of the time of day and everything, and then you see the NASA pictures taken from the moon and from the different spaceships, and you listen to the astronauts speak. It's true. This blue marble, as the one called it out there, it chokes me up because I think about how special this planet is within this universe. It's an amazing, amazing planet. So that's I guess I can narrow down and feel maybe a little bit better. It wasn't destruction of universes however many there were in building up, he was building on this planet.
You can wrap your arms around it.
Yes, yeah. Right.
But I think you can just, sorry, but I think you can leave the question open.
Okay.
You know,
right.
We don't know. We don't know.
No, we don't.
So we're going right now with this planet view, but I think it could be either one.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. In my search, this is, I like this.
Uh-huh. You like that. That ending. Choose your own ending.
Good. Excellent.
That's right.
Natural scientists also write that evidence exists that the Earth received a terrible blow moving from the southwest to the northeast, and that by this blow, the Earth was blasted and made desolate. So was that like the huge, you know, asteroid that crashed around the time of the dinosaurs? You know,
That's what it made me think of.
Uh-huh. So, could be,
Likewise, in the year 1807, according to their reckoning, they found in Siberia in the northern part of the Earth.
Say, according to their reckoning.
Their reckoning.
I just want you to know. I want you to hear that sentence, because this sentence, according to their reckoning, is referring to 1807.
Right.
That's not how we count. That's how they count. According to their reckoning.
Reckoning. Okay.
It's not about according to what scientists think. It means according to their calendar. This is not our calendar. That's what I wanted to show you.
Well, here's a footnote. I can't read the thing, but so Ed prints current Ed's
gives the date in Hebrew letters. Right? So here 1807 is according to their reckoning.
Okay.
Theirs meaning the Goyim.
The Goyim, all right.
This is not our date. It's their date.
Okay.
That's what I'm saying. This sentence means according to their the way they count it.
Okay.
The way they count it. Right.
It's about 200 years ago.
Right, but I'm just saying.
But we don't know
when
what
you
that
see,
was in Jewish time.
Yeah, we do.
Yeah, we would.
Yeah, sure we do. Mm-hmm. We just subtract. Mm-hmm. We just add 40 to that. Whatever.
Well, he gives you the Hebrew letters.
Subtract 40 to that, right? Whatever. We can figure that out. We do know that. That's not the question. The point is that he's saying 1807. He wants to make sure that you don't think that's 1807 from zero, from when Adam got his soul.
Okay, from the Goyim.
It's 1807
so
from
like
the Goyim. It's
like AD.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. CE.
Yes.
They didn't have CE yet. Mm-hmm. They were politically, he wouldn't want to say AD.
Right.
But they didn't in 1807. They didn't at the time you wrote this have CE.
Yeah.
So that's what they would say according to their reckoning.
Okay.
Right.
Okay, so they found in Siberia, under the terrible ice which is ever present there, a great elephant three or four times the size of those found today and whose skeleton now stands in the Zoological Museum in Petersburg, the mastodon. Moreover, inasmuch as elephants cannot live in the extreme cold which dominates that region, this carcass indicates that by the blow which the earth received and by which it was blasted and disordered, this elephant, which once lived in a warm climate that could support elephant life, was carried to its current location by the mighty waves, or that at one time the climate there was warm enough to support such animals.
Right. Okay. Well, and the woolly mammoths that they have right up here in South Dakota, can't remember the town, but they unearthed, you know, a huge pit, dying pit or some of those woolly mammoths, and built some buildings over them that you can go through.
Right. I saw a great New Yorker cartoon with a cave woman standing at a cave, and her husband's schlepping this like mammoth with six arrows in it, pulling it towards the cave, and she says, "I said a mastodon."
Oh.
Let's see. So, too, they have found in the depths of the highest mountains on Earth creatures of the sea which have fossilized and become stone. One natural scientist, Cuvier by name, writes that of the 78 species of creatures which are found in the bowels of the Earth, 48 of them no longer exist in our modern world. What is the volcano in Israel? It's in the southern part. What's it called? I was up there.
I was climbing
up there, and basically, it was a big upheaval because at the top of this, you find little crustaceans that were from the sea. So this was a real upward.
I remember going there.
It wasn't a volcano. It's like
is
a...
It in
no, but you
Israel
definitely find...
It's in the southern part of Israel.
Okay.
Yeah, so you go, and they have actually a really nice, brand-new, fancy hotel there they just built.
Oh.
What?
Oh.
I don't think it's in a lot.
No, that's over.
If you knew what I would say.
But I did.
We did see little actually fossils of little snails and little creatures.
Yeah.
You can find that up in these mountains too.
Yeah. You can, right? Right up there. There are actual fossil beds up by Guffey in that area up in there. Mm-hmm. You know, Highway 50 up through...
There's all kinds of stuff. It's amazing what's around.
We already know of the bones of a giant creature found in the depths of the earth around the city of Baltimore in America, whose length is 17 feet and whose height from the soles of its forelegs to its shoulders is 11 feet and from its hind legs to its back is 9 feet. Bones of this creature have been found in Euro 2 and in the Harz Mountains scattered all around. This species has been named a mammoth. They also found fossilized remnants of creatures they call Iguanodon, whose height was 15 feet and whose length was 90 feet. From the character of its limbs, scientists have judged that it only ate grass. There is yet another species of animal, we'll just finish this, called the Megalosaurus, which was only a little smaller than the Iguanodon, but which was a hunter and a carnivorous. From all it is clear that the teachings of the Kabbalists hundreds of years old, that the world has been destroyed and renewed over and over again as many as 4 times, each time in a more perfect form, is shown in our own times to be just and true.
Hmm. That's so interesting how he's viewing evolution there.
Yeah, yes.
He's taking that in and just saying this supports Kabbalah rather than today where people are fighting it so hard.
Well, and this is before the evolutionary concepts. When Darwin was
before
18.
Darwin.
Yeah, this is before Darwin.
Darwin was around 1850.
Yeah.
1850.
Right.
So he died in 1850 or he
wrote it? It was around, 1840, 1850 in the Galapagos. I just got back from that. So everything is Darwin, Darwin Finches, and all that evolution stuff. Yeah, it's amazing.
Okay.
Yeah.
I went there on the movie Master Commander.
Oh, okay. Good book. I read that.
Yeah.
So, but to answer your question, it says here again that the world had been destroyed and renewed over and over again as many as 4 times.
Yes.
So I guess he's really
into the
counting on this world.
Right.
This is the world.
Yeah. He is. His theory is this world, and his theory is 4.
Right.
Which
would mean this is not the end.
Right. But that was 200 years ago.
Yeah.
Right.
So
well, we haven't seen a destruction since then. Although, if you want to say that other things have destroyed since then, you can
the
say
Holocaust.
That.
1,000 years ago would be the 5th.
What are you talking about? He's talking about 4 already happened, and he's writing in the 1850s.
Right.
So he's just talking about 4. So I'm saying, let's say you take those 4 physical ones and add into that 4.
And did he say that there, how many worlds? What did
he said 7
at the beginning?
Seven. Right.
Well, 7
is the
based
on
the 7 number.
Yeah, the 7 earth. But when you come to the end of days, time accelerates.
Right. I'm saying so. If you would take these physical destructions and add to that the non-physical destructions that we are witnessing today, you might say that going through the Industrial Revolution and then the
technological revolution
and then the knowledge age revolution, that those could be destructions of worlds.
I was going to say, we're blowing through.
Because we are blowing through different worlds.
Yeah,
because you could easily
that's
say.
That's the acceleration
also. Yeah, but
also
how very close
about.
A time these things
right.
were.
But though how the worlds have been destroyed and recreated, if you want to make it that way. I mean, we live in such a different world than somebody even 150 years ago, even 100 years ago.
Yeah.
Even 60 years ago, let's face it.
I do. I love
you know, like we live in a different world.
Right.
I was born in a different world than today.
Yes,
you know,
even you were.
Right, even I was.
I remember the first
as
television.
Young as you are. Oh,
first
for sure.
TV.
I mean,
oh,
I remember getting color TV, but
I remember
beginning
of black and white.
Oh yeah,
I remember the test patterns.
Yep. Oh, the whole bit.
I remember watching the test patterns.
Yeah,
you
sit
there and just wait.
We all watch test patterns, right?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, that was such a big deal.
It was truly.
It was when I was up in Tacoma, Washington, which was in my. Sixth and seventh grade, I was in Tacoma, Washington. So that was about 1949, 1950. Yeah, and they couldn't get the signal over the mountains, so everything came by kinescope. It was done with, it was fascinating.
That's amazing.
Yep.
Just amazing. Yeah, we live in an amazing world. So, if you want to blend those two, you can definitely see how we've gotten from...
Yes.
one to another, and we are rapidly moving through destructions and recreations of different worlds.
We're blasting through them. We are just literally the last 25 years. Think about the last 25 years.
It has been a destruction and recreation.
Talk about
it has
accelerating time and knowledge.
Right.
Knowledge about this world and about ourselves.
Yeah, look at two-year-olds know how to use smartphones and find the videos they want on YouTube.
Right.
It's amazing.
Yeah.
Nobody teaches them.
Some can.
They understand how these things work.
Intuitively, they understand.
They totally know what to do to get to the Mickey Mouse videos they want to see. They can't even ask for it yet. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And they know how to operate these things. We're busy reading the manuals, asking our teenagers how to do it. You know, they're like, doo-doo-doo.
Right. And that's when I get frustrated, because it doesn't come as naturally to me as it does my grandchildren, and that infuriates me to be in that position
I just tell my kids, I'm dumb, will you just help me do it?
I do it too. How do you know this? And that's all I'm always saying, how do you know this?
My friend called herself a technotard. I think that's such a great
technotard.
Technotard, just technoidiot.
Very, very